Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is my opinion, and I'm going to seek my approval. Do I approve of me?
Love doesn't have any expectations. It doesn't seek something in return. It gives because it wants to.
At our core, all of us have these feelings of being unlovable and inadequate. And until we start to care for those parts of ourselves, we can't really have the outer successes that we long for.
Does money buy you intuition, insight, creativity, higher vision, transcendence? No. Money does buy you pleasure, and pleasure is good, but it's not enough. We need fulfillment.
Welcome to the Unwind Podcast, a show to help you pause, relax, reflect, and be curious. I'm your host, Poppy Jamie, a best-selling author and entrepreneur exploring the human experience. I interview world-leading thinkers, shaping ideas around the mind, health, spirituality, philosophy, and culture. I'm often reminded that thoughts become things, so we need to choose the good ones. I hope this show helps you to do that too. In today's podcast, we're moving into the world of high-performance coaching with Dr. Arya, a clinical psychologist, coach, best-selling author of A Mindful Year, and the man behind countless success stories. Dr. Arya blends clinical expertise with cutting-edge coaching techniques to help entrepreneurs, celebrities, and his coaching groups unlock more inner strength, build resilience, break down limiting patterns and fear-based behaviors. So if you're facing a creative block, struggling with relationships, finding yourself trapped in similar patterns that aren't working out for you, or simply looking to optimize your days, Dr. Arya is a fantastic resource to find, and I hope you enjoy our conversation.
If someone's feeling stuck in a rut, which I feel a lot of people are at the moment, you know, we're in a really challenging time globally, politically, socially. And especially if life isn't giving them what they want, what should they do?
Well, there's a fundamental law of the universe, which is that life involves suffering. And it connects to the noble truth in Buddhism. And a lot of the time we fight that. But the really brutal fact of life is that we all face these unwanted and unexpected events. You know, we lose someone we love. Want to be in a relationship, but the person might not want to be in one with us. We could struggle to conceive or go through a failed round of IVF. Our sister could be diagnosed with cancer. We could be diagnosed with an illness. Life is very hard at times, and there's no way to escape that. And so part of it, though, is beginning to appreciate that we need to create space for whatever feelings arise in that moment. You are going to have times when anxiety will arise, where feeling depressed arises, where you have fears, you have doubts, you have insecurities. And that is completely natural. But what happens is most of the time is we fight against it, or we judge ourselves for feeling this way. And that actually perpetuates what we feel. So I'd say the first fundamental step is awareness and getting in tune with how we're feeling and creating space for it. And there's a poem by the mystic poet Rumi, and he talks about really you being like a house and the emotions are coming to knock on your door. And part of it is opening the door and seeing what's there and actually, in the strangest way, reaching a stage where we begin to welcome what comes.
I love that poem. And it also feels like a place sometimes so far away for us to reach, this idea where we can welcome these emotions that I think that we've been conditioned to ignore, suppress. And especially when you're in that kind of stuck in a rut feeling where you're trying, but it feels like life isn't moving. Life is just continuing to send you challenges. Mm. How do you support your clients when each week it feels like they've got another bombshell?
One of my favorite quotes is by A.H. Almas, and he says that your conflicts, all the difficult things, all the problematic situations in your life are actually yours. They're specifically yours, and they're designed specifically for you by a part of you that loves you more than anything else. And that part of you that loves you more than anything else has created roadblocks to lead you back to yourself. You're not going in the right direction unless there's something pricking you in the side, telling you, look here, this way. That part of you loves you so much that it will go to extreme measures to wake you up. It will make you suffer greatly if you don't listen. What else can it do? That is its purpose. So if we take a step back, the problem in life is always psychological. I believe that the solution to life is always spiritual. It's beginning to see that, like we talked about, these cruel or brutal or horrific events in life, these challenges that we face, are actually a way of returning us back to what I call truth, back to a place of authenticity, of truthfulness, of connecting us to who we truly are. Because along this path, we've lost our way, and our quest is to come back to it.
This resonates so much. Really? I was sitting next to this lady yesterday, and she was telling me how she has triplets. Mm. And she said, it's really beautiful, the lesson I've learned in having triplets, in that every single person is such a unique individual. Mm. So they've all been brought up in the same, and yet they're so different. And I feel that so much suffering emotionally and socially at the moment is because, to speak to your point that you've just made, we've lost who we are. We don't think we're special. Mm-hmm. And so immediately we see someone else's success and think, oh God, another example of how kind of average and mediocre and useless I am. Mm. And this idea of like leading back to your truth, it feels so good. It feels like such a solution. And yet, what are those steps back to truth? Because maybe even from the age of 2 years old, we've been separated from our truth.
Completely. I think one of the biggest mistakes is that we've confused value in terms of what we do as opposed to who we are. We're in this, you know, capitalistic society where your value is based on your productivity and what you can do. Now, of course, it's important to bring value. But at the same time, whenever we look at a baby, we don't look at a baby and say, okay, what do you contribute to society? All you do is you sit, you cry, you eat, so you have no value. Would we say that a baby has less value than a grown human being? We wouldn't. We'd see that that baby has intrinsic value because of its essence, because of what is. Now, all of us begin to, though, look at what we do, and then we equate that to our self-value. And it becomes a status game. You know, I have this number of followers, or I'm making this amount of income, or I have this amount of prestige or status. These games are a part of life, and that's okay. But there's two roads to life. There's the external path, the status, the prestige, the finance, and that is a game to play. But there's also the internal journey, which is self-worth, self-understanding, self-love, self-compassion. And many of us get caught up in the external journey, but we forget about the internal one. We lose sight that our pure purpose in life is to be present and to express our authentic self. That's it.
How does this work with you being a high-performance coach? Because I'm sure you have so many people all around the world, and I know you do, call you up and say, Dr. Arya, help me be more successful.
Yeah, totally.
And then you're saying, oh, actually, maybe it's not about you getting the promotion. Maybe this is about you looking inward. But how does this align with a high-performance coach?
And it almost seems like an oxymoron in the title, because I'll speak to someone and they'll think it'll be all about performance. But really, that's the way of someone entering through the door. And, you know, the mystics would say you need to get on a donkey to get to the house, but then you have to dismantle from the horse or the donkey to enter the house. The egoic mind will be focused on performance. Now, in the work that I do, it is about helping people to often push the needle, to explore what it looks like for them to be performing at their highest level of potential. The question then is, how do we do that? It's easy to perform well whenever the conditions are favorable. But whenever life, when we have a VUCA environment, when life is volatile or uncertain or complex or ambiguous, the mind will create doubts, anxieties. It will create that imposter syndrome. It will pull us out of the present moment. And our task then is to come back to a place of presence. And where there's presence, there's no mind. We're below the thoughts, we're below the emotions, and we're moving from a place of truth. Now, when we're moving from a place of truth, we are incredibly powerful because we're not concerned with the outcome. We're just present. And that's when we have access to creativity, skill, innovation. It's not necessarily skill per se that separates the masters from the elite. It's actually the ability to access that creativity, that skill, that wisdom. You know, the Mark Vansel spoke of Michael Jordan and he said, Michael is a mystic. His gift isn't that he can run fast or jump high or shoot a basketball. It's that he's completely present. And so whenever we are present and we are truly being ourselves and we're not concerned with how this is looking or what people are thinking, that's when we're most powerful.
What came first for you, psychology or spirituality?
Psychology, in that I'm a scientist and I always place a huge amount of credence on research and can it be tested? Can it be verified? I would feel like I'm on a lot more stable ground if the data would support it. And I came into this part of my life wanting to understand the mind. How does it work? What are the principles? What does it crave? What does it seek? And what I found is that it is immensely useful to understand how the mind works. But the solution isn't to fall into that game. In a way, it's to transcend the mind. Now, we can only understand the mind whenever we can observe the mind and create distance from the mind. But our peace will lie in disidentification from the mind. So the problem, like I was saying, is psychological. It's not what happens to us that's painful. It's the thoughts and feelings that are created around it. The ancient Stoics, Epictetus, said this 2,000 years ago. Men are concerned not by things, but by the notions that they form around them. Shakespeare said it, you know, there's nothing good nor bad, but thinking makes it so. And so along the path, I've now become a lot more open to understanding that psychology is important. But if we get caught up in that game, all we're going to do is essentially it's like holding a bomb, a live bomb, and holding it in front of us and putting it on the seat below us. Like we're just moving the problem from one place to another. We can get caught up in one status game to another. The solution, though, is spiritual, is to actually come back to truth, to come back to authenticity, to live your life on your terms, to be open, to be vulnerable, to learn, to grow, to evolve through all these difficult situations, but to keep on coming back to who you are.
Would you mind sharing an example of maybe when that has happened in your own life, where you've had to take a new understanding of a situation, one away from maybe the physical world of psychology and move it into a more spiritual perspective?
So a personal example would be, you know, in relationships. I was married, I'd been with my partner for 10 years, and then one day she informed me that she'd been having an affair with a man from work and she was pregnant with his child. Now, in that moment, it felt as if my world was just falling apart. Like everything that I created, that I'd built, that we had created, that we'd built from our family home to the dog that we had, I'd become a part of her family, to the vision of us growing older, to thinking this is the woman that would be the mother of my own children. And that all just dissipated. Once I was able to accept and process the emotion, it gave me a chance to then look inward and say, okay, I'm not responsible for this person's actions, but her actions came out of a context. And I played into that context. So where is the growth for me? It's not about asking God, why did this happen to me? It's about asking God, where are you taking me? And a huge part that I saw, a strand that I saw, was that I had lost myself. I had become the man that I thought she wanted me to be, that I thought society admires. And that was so far away from who I was. And so life found this way of, it would give me different indications along the way, but I didn't listen until one day I had no choice but to be on a very different trajectory and to really look inward and see, okay, where have I lost my way? And so over the last 4 or 5 years, it's been a returning to like I was saying, that place of truth, to live in line with who I am, to stand for what I believe in, to be connected to my emotions, to understand all the different patterns that I picked up as a child that helped me in some ways, but inadvertently held me back in others, and to come back to living from my true self. So whenever I talk about living from truth, for me, that's the spiritual part of life. It's, you've got the material aspect of life, which is what society says is important and what we should do and how we should be and how we should look and how we should dress and how we should talk and what success means in our career and what a relationship should look like and when we should get married and when we should have children. And then there is your journey, and that may be different.
This is one of the most important conversations for us all to be having, because I feel in the last few years, the cultural conversation feels like it really focused on this is how you get what you want in life.
Yeah.
And then everyone started to get really disappointed, because when, to your point, that's what you want in life, and then suddenly this is your journey, and when expectations and reality aren't matching,
yeah,
that gap is really hard to handle.
Yeah.
How do you handle the gap? And I know you've kind of said going back to truth, but in that moment when the love of your life is sharing devastating news, what was your first step out of that? Was it, because you'd obviously done a lot of kind of knowledge and you obviously were a professional during this point, but was it to find more professional help? Was it to kind of go to a Buddhist retreat? Practically speaking, when you've had such a kind of moment, a bombshell moment, what does someone do in that shock?
Well, it almost seemed like a cruel irony of life that my work was in resilience, and then I probably received what for me at the time would have been one of the most challenging situations to be in. And so it gave me an opportunity to actually live out the principles that I was espousing or teaching or working on with individuals. And for me, that was very important to do that. So I have this ARIA framework, and the A is to acknowledge what it is that you're experiencing and what you're feeling. So the first part was just creating space for the emotion. Like we were saying, you are going to go through a difficult time in your life. There's a storm coming and it's going to hit. Or there are things that which are happening in the world which are impacting you profoundly on an emotional level. You have no control over that. What we can do is create space for the emotion. Now, that's so much easier to say than to do. But the first part is feeling what we're feeling. The meaning of life is to experience life. Whatever moment we're given, it's this moment to experience whatever is arising. And the beauty is that in feeling it, it will actually then pass on its own accord.
Because it's interesting that I think there's a fear in feeling it, because there's a psychobabble of conversation going on about be the energy you want to attract. And so people are terrified of feeling bad feelings because they think, well, I don't want to attract more bad feelings, so I'm just going to tell myself everything's great.
And that is untruthful. So that's why it comes back to truth. What is the truth of the moment? Most of the time, and a lot of the time in self-development work, like you're saying, it's to focus on the positive, to be the energy that you want to attract, this law of attraction that if you are putting out certain energy, you'll receive that in return. Now, you can cut it up different ways, but in terms of an emotional level, you have not asked for this emotion to arise. When someone wakes up and they're feeling deep anxiety, they're not woken up and thought, do you know what, I'm going to conjure up anxiety, or I'm going to feel suicidal, I just want it all to end. It's not how it works. It's here. And so we have two choices. We either can reject it and deny it, or, and I know it's incredibly painful, we can begin to accept it. Now, through the acceptance, we can transform it. Acceptance isn't a process of addition, it's a process of subtraction. And what I mean by that is we actually don't need to do anything to accept something. What we have to do is undo what the mind typically does in order to feel it and process it and for it to pass. Now, the mind does not like pain. The mind has evolved with three evolutionary principles: to seek pleasure, avoid pain, and conserve energy. So anytime there's a painful emotion, it's going to want to get rid of it. Deny it, reject it, bury it, push it down. That works temporarily. We can distract ourselves for a certain period of time, but it's not going to pass. And so true freedom, true liberation is being able to experience what we're experiencing, but it then passes a lot more quickly. It's like true freedom isn't about avoiding pain. It's actually experiencing everything which life will bring you, which will be beauty and will be immense joy and pleasure, but it'll also be deep despair and pain at times because you cannot have one without the other.
I think one of the hardest things is to witness someone you love go through emotional pain, because if you're probably on the whole, most human beings would want to take away someone's pain if they could.
Completely.
So this obviously then brings two people trying to manage their mental health in a relationship that will no doubt become quite tricky, because two people are never going to be on the same journey. One has a ton of difficult years, then the other person has a difficult years, and people kind of like swapping kind of who's the supporter role. How do you help people stay kind of in their resilience when they're in a partnership whereby it is incredibly emotionally triggering?
The fundamental principle I work from, which is you are not responsible for how someone else feels. Full stop. You're not responsible for how your partner feels. You're not responsible if they feel happy, if they feel sad. You're not responsible if they're hurting or if they're not. If we left it there, that probably sounds quite callous and cruel. But what you are responsible for is moving from a place of truth, and truth is love. So we are responsible for moving from a place of love. But where there's love, there's no control. And where there's control, there's no love. Now, what happens most of the time is people are in a relationship and the other person might be anxious or insecure or angry, and we want to change that. We don't want them to feel anxious or insecure, and we want them to feel happy and content. But the reason that we want them to feel that way is because we don't like how we feel when we're in their presence. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to manage our own feeling by controlling the other person. Mm. And the other person experiences it. It's masqueraded as love, but it's actually control. Mm. And they feel like, you don't understand me. You're not listening. You're not getting what I'm going through. You're just trying to provide a solution or fix me or change how I feel. And all I need right now is to be heard, is to be seen, is to be understood. When we let go of the need to try and help anyone, to try and change anyone, to try and make anything better, we are so much freer to move from a place of love. Now, from that place of love, will we inadvertently end up helping that person? Undoubtedly, yes. Because we'll be compassionate, because we'll be understanding, because we'll listen, because our metric of success won't be, have I changed this person? It will be, am I present? Are we connected? Do they truly feel that I understand? And that's the key to healing.
What do you think we over-prioritize and under-prioritize when we're thinking about relationships?
There were different elements that I didn't see when I was in the relationship to what I appreciated after the relationship. And I think one element is that we can be with someone who is able to shut off their emotion and to compartmentalize. And actually, a relationship can only ever truly grow when we're in touch with how we feel and if we are dedicated to growing and evolving. And what I'd say is, previously, I viewed my spiritual journey as my own and my partner's. If they wish to grow on one, that's up to them. But what I've seen is it's such an integral and important aspect to my life that I think what I then highly valued is someone who is self-reflective, who's someone who wishes to grow and evolve, someone who is willing to have difficult conversations, and someone who really at their heart of values, I think kindness. I think kindness is probably one of the most underrated values. You know, someone with a kind heart, I think is gold dust. And I think in society, a lot of the time, we end up focusing probably more on just having companionship than compatibility.
Mm.
How often do we really stop and think, okay, on the one hand, look, is chemistry important? Without shadow of a doubt. So that physical attraction, that emotional intimacy that you have together, I think is a key pillar. But what about our values? Like, how aligned are they? How do they treat a waiter, or what's important to them, or what do they stand for? How do they live their life? And what is it that we're wanting to create and build together? You know, one mistake that I made with my ex-wife is we never really talked or built a future together. We met when we were in our 20s. And honestly, the vision I had of my future is so vastly different to the vision she had of hers. And it was never going to work. We're always going to be going in these slightly different directions. And 1 degree in the beginning doesn't look like a lot, but 50 miles on, it's a huge chasm. And so I'd say, you know, as well as the chemistry, it's also about the compatibility. And then it's also about the future that you both want to create together.
What are your thoughts on how quickly you know about compatibility? In the sense that a lot of people say, if you feel instantly compatible with someone, then run a million miles away because that's your trauma being triggered. Mm. But what are your thoughts on that? Because as we've said, you sit down with thousands of people, and I'm sure you hear a lot of like inside relationship stories. Do you see a trend in the way people met and how they felt then to then actually how the relationship played out?
We can all talk a good game.
Mm.
I think I give a lot less weight now to words and a lot more to how someone turns up. And that will apply to myself too. And so that, I think, takes time. And it also takes clarity of vision. Because another mistake that we make is we often find someone, but what they actually represent is our own unmet needs, and we see them within someone else. And all of a sudden, we're not seeing that person anymore. What we're seeing is what they can bring into our life. And we create an attachment. An attachment in the Buddhist sense is someone or something that we think we need to be happy. Oh my goodness, this person is incredible, and they make me feel valued, or they make me feel understood. Until we can reach a place where we understand our own unmet needs and we begin to give them to ourselves. If we need to feel loved, we begin to give self-love. If we need to feel understood, we begin to understand ourselves. If we need validation, we begin to say, "This is, I am your validation." When we can reach that place where we feel whole on our own, there will be no need. Because the thing about a need or an attachment is, if we get someone, we're then going to feel like we need to control them to keep them, or we'll be anxious that we won't have them. And so we'll begin to distort ourselves or distort who they are in order to keep the relationship going. And that's just a recipe for disaster.
It's so interesting because that feeling of when someone else validates you is so addictive. I mean, when you're with someone you just think is so unbelievably great and you're standing next to them and you kind of feel like you're going to wear their jacket almost.
Yeah.
But it doesn't last that long.
It's a drug.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's a drug. We get addicted to the drug for validation and for approval. And like any drug, you're going to have a high, but get ready for the come down or the hangover. Because what the mind will do is, if it doesn't receive it from that person, it will then begin to feel unworthy or unloved or unvaluable. And it will constantly be seeking then that love and validation from the other person. Or if someone else comes along and is providing a greater sense of validation or approval, the mind will then want to go there. So it won't be based on anything real. Where I truly believe you can only fully love when you fully love yourself.
As you know, I'm a huge advocate for natural ways to optimize health. Nature is full of medicine if we care to find it. So this led me recently to discover Karma Ayurveda, a skincare and hair care brand that now holds a special place in my heart. Originating from India, it's been around for 20 incredible years, crafting holistic, natural products rooted in Ayurvedic wisdom. One of my personal favorites is their Kumbh Kamadi range, enriched with saffron. Not only does it smell divine, but it also works wonders on the skin, giving you that real, I think I've just slept for 10 hours glow, which, let's be honest, we all want. In exciting news, Karma Ayurveda has just arrived in the UK, opening a stunning store in Notting Hill. Here you can explore their range of Ayurvedic treatments and even meet with an Ayurvedic doctor for personalized advice. I recently went this morning to meet a doctor and it was incredible. She checked my pulse and after a few minutes, she was able to tell me everything that I have been struggling with, even though I didn't mention a thing to her. She was able to tell through checking my pulse how my digestion was and she gave me some incredible advice to help soothe that. And she was also able to tell that my skin was dry. Honestly, it was an incredible experience that I highly recommend if you're in the London area. But if you're not, then you can still tap into the secrets of Ayurveda and tap into that harmony that you can find using Karma Ayurveda's products. Do visit their website at karmaayurveda.com to discover more. Do you think that most people are codependent, even if they don't think they're codependent, because of our natural human attachment to waiting for that reaction and that reaction of someone else influencing then how we feel?
Absolutely. Most people are dependent on another person for their own emotional well-being. Most people are dependent on another person to feel happy. Most people are dependent on another person to feel validated. And we've been taught that we get status from other people. We've been taught that your value is what other people think of you. And that is a recipe for misery and suffering because it's outside of your control. That sense of worth and peace and wholeness is dependent on whether or not people see you. And sometimes they won't. And the more that we can move to that place of inner peace, inner appreciation, inner love, inner understanding, that's when actually we'll be most free and people will be drawn into our lives who appreciate us for who we are rather than us bringing people into our lives to serve a function.
In appreciation, I think, is such a lovely word because there's very few places in life that encourage you actually to appreciate yourself, you know, because it's such a soft word, appreciation, because it's not boasting, it's not celebrating. They all feel quite aggressive words, but this inner appreciation of our own unique essence.
Yeah.
Practically or tangibly, how do you encourage people to do this?
I'd say the first step is to notice what your mind is saying. Because one of the greatest steps we can take is begin to disidentify from our mind. To see that the mind has a mind of its own. So the trap we fall into is we think that what our mind says is reality and that this is who we are. You know, we could do a very brief experiment now. If I said, okay, for the next 60 seconds, I don't want you probably to have any thoughts. Don't think anything. Okay. I'm going to say a few words, but don't say anything. Okay. Holiday. Your mum. Puppy. Sunshine. Okay, did you keep a blank mind?
I mean, obviously I thought about everything.
Obviously.
We're in Barbados, my mum was there, sunshine
no
was
way.
Great.
No way, totally. Really. It seems like a simple point, but I think it's profound. If you didn't create that thought, what did? I said don't create any thoughts, and you had no intention to create a thought, but your mind did. Your mind created all these different thoughts, and that's what the mind will do. It will pre-populate your consciousness with ideas, evaluations, assessments, predictions, and that's what it does. That's its task. The moment that we are not experiencing that, our consciousness will be somewhere else. But each thought is arising within your consciousness. You are not that thought. You are the observer of the thought. In the same way that I am not this bottle, I am the observer of the bottle. If you can see it, it's not who you are. And so we can begin to create more and more distance because the biggest trap is when we become fused with our mind. Our mind has a thought and then we buy into it and we believe it and we take it to be true. Combine this with the fact that the mind has a negativity bias. We know that scientific studies show that we will focus on, select, and retain negative information more than positive information. And it's about a 5-to-1 weight. And we understand the reasons for it. But if your mind has a mind of its own and has a negativity bias, it's not going to celebrate you, appreciate you, pick up on all the ways in which you're trying really hard during these difficult times the times when you do just keep on going, even though you don't feel like it, or you turn up, or you're doing your best to be compassionate or patient. And of course, you won't always reach the level of expectation that your mind sets you. But what your mind will do is will focus on the way that you're failing. The mind will focus on what's missing, what's not working, and negative instances in the past or the future. And our task is to focus on what's working, what we have now, and the opportunities in the present moment. And so the first step is just begin to notice, okay, that is my mind and it has a voice and a narrative, but just because I have a thought does not mean that it's true.
More and more when I talk to people about sort of the conversations we've had today, there is a hesitancy to reach out for more qualified help.
Yeah.
And I know through having had the luxury of sitting down with people like yourself, you know, having access to these tools, life really can transform. Mm-hmm. But what can a high performance coach bring someone if they don't feel like they may need it? But in my eyes, I kind of think, why wouldn't you have it if you could allocate some personal investment into it?
Well, on the one hand, it's recognizing the social and cultural narrative that boys don't cry and that men shouldn't share their emotions. And that's a sign of weakness rather than of strength. And, you know, I was even watching Friends the other day, and, you know, the Bruce Willis episode where he doesn't show his emotion and then Rachel encourages him to, and then he shares it, and then he opens up the waterworks and she's like, no, put it back. Like, just don't do that anymore. Don't, you're oversharing now. There's too much emotion. But just built into the fabric of our society. And I think that's where a lot of the time females are a lot more in tune and in touch with their emotion. And as men, we're playing catch up. And you see either in the age gaps in relationships or even within a relationship, often the female's much more aligned and sees, do you know, there's a sense of disconnection here. Or we are not emotionally intimate. And it might be manifesting as a lack of sex, but that's a symptom. That's not the problem. The problem is we are not close and we're not connected and we're not present with each other. And a lot of the time, men don't see it or they struggle to look at it. What I do is I'd say maybe flip the position in the room in terms of rather than looking at should I or should I not seek help, focus on what are the ways in which I want to grow and evolve? What is it that I would love to work on? Or even if my mind is afraid of working on, what would be the biggest leverage point which will allow me to then be more happy, be more content, be more fulfilled, be more productive, be more effective, whatever it is that connects with you. And if someone else then can be a part of that, it's probably undoubtedly true that that will be the case. You're not going to have Roger Federer not having a coach. You're not going to have an entrepreneur not having a business coach. And it's the same way in terms of our psychology and our personal life. I think people are beginning to be more open to an idea that there are some people who have studied for 10, 15, 20 years on the psychology of the mind, and it's a lot simpler and quicker and easier to seek that expertise and to find someone with whom you trust, you feel safe, and then you can grow with them.
That's really helpful advice. And I love the idea Roger Federer would never get on without a coach. Like, why would any of us try to go through the gauntlet of life without any sort of help? And I think, you know, just to reflect on a couple of points that I just feel you've made so beautifully, which is having this honesty about life is full of pain. I just want to touch upon that again, really, because I think it's so relieving for us all to hear that all of us struggle, you know, like all of us, no matter who you are. And especially as we're going in through into these winter months, I think they can become more apparent to people. Are there daily practices that you do just to kind of support you in this spiritual and psychological journey that you're on and you're constantly evolving in?
Well, even before we come to that, it's even to touch upon this point that on the one hand, like we're saying, all these experiences will be a way to bring us back home to ourselves. At the same time, we won't always understand it at the time as to what is happening. And so, you know, from a personal perspective, I lost my brother a year ago. And the depth of spiritual pain that I've experienced in the past year has been profound. It's been very different to anything else I've experienced. You know, whenever my ex-wife and I separated and our lives went different ways, a lot changed in terms of the exterior of my life, where I lived, who I was spending my time with. I then changed in terms of the way I approached life, what I did. So a lot externally changed. With my brother, he wasn't living in the same city, so nothing seemed to change externally, but on a very deep level, it was just this immense pain. And it will take time, you know, it's different strands which are emerging from that. But it's part of it is to just stay open to it. And in a way, that's where trust comes in, just to trust that as painful as it is, the universe is unfolding as it must. And it's unfolding this way, and it always would have unfolded this way. And even if my mind conceptually cannot explain it, you know, there's some things that you can't rationally explain away all the pain and suffering that people might be experiencing in different parts of the world. All we can do is create space for it and then just come back to that place of love. So sometimes the most important thing is just to look after yourself and to recognize, do you know, right now, this is really fucking hard, or this is painful, or this is a dark chapter right now, and I'm really struggling. And what I need to do is focus on, I would even ask myself, what does my mind need today to be nourished or to be loved? What does my body need today to be nourished or to be loved? What does my heart need today to be nourished or to be loved? And that will often include, like you're saying, speaking to the people you love or whom you trust, or being open, or just beginning to appreciate these little things. The part that you can't avoid, which I found is the hardest thing that have happened in my life, have been the ones that at the same time have just brought me back to what's most important. Like everything else melts away, you know, when you're in, and I'm sure the people listening to it can acknowledge it. If you find out your sister has cancer, or your child becomes unwell, or you're facing your own mortality, or someone around you, you lose. You suddenly, it's like you suddenly have clarity of vision. Mm-hmm. You see it and you're like, oh my goodness, that does not matter. This is a social construct. This is just a game. And in the beginning, it can be tough because I remember experiencing anger, being like, how were we all caught up in these tiny little minuscule parts of life, which really don't seem to hold any substance or meaning? And then, of course, you go through it and you reach acceptance that we're all going to have times where we get caught up in it, but then just coming back to what's meaningful. And so as painful as it is, the depth of the pain that I have for my brother passing reflects the depth of my love for him. Mm-hmm. And you can't escape it. Part of it is just being open to it and knowing that beneath all of this, beneath the pain, beneath the emotion, there is that sense of stillness and peace. And if we can connect to that, knowing that this too shall pass and this will unfold in such a way that what I'm experiencing right now will not continue in perpetuity. You know, there will be more love, there will be more peace, there will be more happiness, there will be more connection, and there will be more moments. Part of it is being patient and staying open.
That was just so beautiful. So I just want to make a point in saying thank you so much for sharing that just incredible answer. And I guess just to kind of end on a spiritual note, which is, I don't know whether you've had experiences where you've just had this like reminder that we are just souls having a physical experience, and how that has reassured you that even if the world can feel so painful, we do live in a compassionate universe. Because I think it's sometimes, you know, you can go, why God? Why?
Yeah. I think for each person, it's finding those moments where you do feel at peace. And without a shadow of a doubt, I think nature is a huge one. Mm. At some point, we separated ourselves from nature and thought we're above it. Mm. But I know for me, whenever I am standing looking at the ocean or looking at trees or in a landscape, there's a sense of deep inner peace, because the mind is often at rest. Because whenever we look at a sunset, the mind is typically not involved in. We're purely accepting and experiencing and appreciating that sunset. And that's the way that I define love. Love is to see reality and appreciate it. Going back to what you're saying with inner appreciation, what the mind isn't doing is getting involved in saying, do you know what, that orange should be a little bit more red and I should move that tree to the left and I wish that the tide was closer in and not further away. No, we're just seeing it and we're appreciating it and we're creating more stillness. I think a big part of what we come to seeing that stillness is so important and we can only access presence through stillness. And so I think my invitation to everyone would be to slow down. Our mind will try and go at 100 miles an hour and nothing's ever enough. We need to go faster and we need to do more. We need to create more. And sometimes to go fast, we need to go slow. When we access that stillness, whenever we access that presence, whenever we just keep on connecting to this moment, the irony is we'll be so much more powerful. That we'll be more loving, we'll be more compassionate, we'll be wiser, we'll be more understanding, we'll make better decisions in our career, with our relationships. But it all comes back to creating space, creating that stillness and that presence, which will then allow us to return to that place of truth.
Absolutely. Now, where can people find you and how can people work with you? Well, firstly, you've got the best content on Instagram. Not only have we kind of weaved each in into each other's lives, but I am an avid follower and I'm kind of obsessed with all your videos. So if anybody likes psychological and spiritual understanding, explanations, learnings, I will put a link to your Instagram. But how do people work with you on a deeper level?
Yeah, well, they could check out the website if you want to put the link in and then be in touch. Right now, I'm just doing one-to-one client work, but I'm really hoping of creating a group program, which would be something more accessible to more people if these principles resonate with them as a way of hopefully creating some sort of community where we can all help each other remind ourselves of what's most important.
Thank you so much. This was really beautiful and I'm going to be thinking about this for days. So I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for the space and thank you for asking such beautiful questions and for accepting me as I am.
Thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoyed today, please hit subscribe and leave a comment because this helps the podcast so much. I'd be endlessly grateful if you wouldn't mind doing so. My mental health book, Happy Not Perfect, is available to order now. The book teaches you how to be a flexible thinker, a skill that helps you navigate any challenge that might come your way, helps you manage emotions, and helps you thrive to be the bendiest version of yourself. Until next time, I love hearing from you, so do shoot me a message on Instagram, send me a DM with any of your thoughts. Stay safe and well.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.